You are entering the Royals Podcast Network.
A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
Belted to left field. Billy comes through tonight. Splat!
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Welcome into the Kansas City Baseball Vault. I'm Troy Olson. I'm joined, of course, by Mike and Jeff. And today, we're finally back on the guest train. We think we have everything worked out, and we're gonna venture out on guests. And we got quite a bit for you today. Mike can correct me if I'm wrong on any of this, but we do have Jim Callis at the end of the show, which is going to be him and Mike. It's a pre-recorded interview that I've not heard, but I'm sure it's fantastic. Mike, do you want to give any teaser on that?
We talked about minor league prospects.
There you go. So you'll catch that at the end of the show. Before the end of the show, you will hear from Jason Parks, who is of Baseball Prospectus, who is absolutely a favorite of this show. One of the originals. I mean, you just don't get better than
we had him back in the ice house. Well, he wasn't in the ice house, but we talked to him when we were in the ice house.
But you know where he has been?
Kelly's. Yes.
He has been Kelly's.
Of course, they were here for the All-Star stuff, and him and Kevin and all of us went out to Kelly's, and it was quite the group of people there. But, you know, the cool thing was Jason had just gotten out of an engagement. His engagement had fallen apart. And Jason is not, you know, probably – he's not a guy that you look at and go, man, that guy is just drop-dead gorgeous. You know, he's got a very distinguished look, but he's just Jason Parks, and you can look him up online if you can find actual pictures of him. But he had a whole table of ladies, and when I left, and I said something to him the next day, I was like, so, you know, it looked like you were going to have a good night. He says, you know what, I changed tables, and it was a good night. So he went from one table of ladies and decided to trade up to another table and went on his way. So Jason had a good time in Kansas City from the sounds of it. I'm probably going to get killed for telling that story, but
probably, but you know what?
I think he wrote about it in one of his articles.
I think he did, yeah.
He alluded to making, I think, kissy face, quote-unquote, was the term, I believe. So I think he'll be okay with that being out there.
Yeah, I mean, there's not much shame in his game, I don't imagine.
You know, I just want to hit on this really quick. It's not anything we're going to talk about, but except for just how outrageous contracts have gotten. But if you haven't seen it already, Freddie Freeman signed a deal that is going to make him the face of the Atlanta Braves for a long time. Well, 8 years to be exact, and $135 million. And this isn't like the NFL or the NBA, or I think the NHL is the same way now, where they could just say 3 years into this contract, you're no good anymore, see ya. You've gotten your money paid up until now. We don't owe you anything the rest of the way. No, they will be on the hook for all of this money. That's a lot of money.
The previous big contract for the Braves was Chipper Jones. And hey, granted, you know, the money and the environment was a lot different. And I think his contract was like 6 years and $90 million at the time. I don't remember when he signed that. But, yeah, that's a big payday for Freddie Freeman. I think there was some discussion on that could be kind of a measuring stick for Eric Hosmer. Now, Freeman's been better than Hosmer, so I think if Hosmer's looking at an extension, that's probably the ceiling of what he's going to get unless he just really busts out. But, you know, he's a couple years away from free agency, so we're pretty far off from Eric Hosmer probably being out looking for that kind of a market, just because Scott Boras and all that, he's probably going to hit free agency. Sad to say.
But they do need to make contracts like that, and they're going to have to play the free agent market, because looking at the BP Top 101, which you can find, it's a free article, just search Baseball Prospectus Top 101 or BP Top 101, you'll find it. The Braves only have two in the top 100, a right-handed pitcher named Lucas Sims and a catcher named Christian Betancourt, 40 and 87 respectively. And so they have to make these kind of deals, because otherwise they're not going to be able to compete in years to come, and they're going to have to play in the free agent market. Some we're going to talk about later. The Royals, if you haven't already read the article, has seven in the top 100 and a couple just outside, or top 101, I'm sorry. And, you know, they're going to have to, because teams like the Red Sox have six. Teams like the Cubs, who are someday going to be good again because they have the money, have seven. But, you know, teams like the Tigers, who have Nick Castellanos, who I think, aren't they even talking about bringing him up this year?
Yeah, he should be the everyday third baseman now they've got Fielder out of the picture.
So they technically have no prospects after 3 weeks into the season.
Pretty much. I mean, the other guy would be Iglesias, who again, I mean, he was playing for them last year in the playoffs. So he's a guy who's going to be, you know, a big leaguer pretty much all the time. But he was a former prospect and, you know, definitely really good defensively. But yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it. All their prospects are graduated or like Abisail Garcia was traded in the deal that got Jose Iglesias in the first place.
There's 8 for the Twins, 7 for the Pirates, 4 for the Cardinals, but it doesn't matter. The Cardinals, everybody they touch does really well. Surprisingly, the Rays only have 2, and it's 90 and 92, a left-handed pitcher named Annie Romero and a right-handed pitcher that some of you may be familiar with by the name of Jake Odorizzi. And honestly, I think that says a lot about Odorizzi, that he's been in that farm for this long, and he still really hasn't, you know, became everything we thought he could be, because I thought he was going to be a part of the starting five last year for wherever he went. And then, of course, the Rays were loaded at pitching, so they didn't necessarily need to push him up. But I would think he'd be higher in that list than where he is. And no Mike Montgomery, so they weren't even able to work magic and save him, at least not yet. I mean, Jeff, do you still see your blessed Rays doing something with Odorizzi and Montgomery?
I think Odorizzi, and that's what if you call it a knock on him, was back when he was here with the Royals, he kind of is what he is. I don't know that his projectability is much. Like, he doesn't have much more that he's going to gain at the major league level. I think most people think that he's going to be a pretty good major league pitcher, maybe slightly above. I don't know if I'd say pretty good, but, you know, a good major league pitcher. Average to above average, and, you know, just not anything special. So, especially when you look at Baseball Prospectus, and we talked about this last show, where they seem to really kind of like those high ceilings and those projectability ratings, if you will, where you can look forward and say, okay, this guy's got this level of talent. We're not guaranteeing he's going to reach it, but it's out there, you know. So I think when you look at Odorizzi now, I mean, what, he's like 23, 24 right now. I don't know how old he is. Offhand, but he's getting to that age where you're not going to gain much more than what he already has. So, but what I think the Rays are going to be good at doing, and what they have shown they're good at doing, is taking a player like that and, you know, putting them in a position, putting them in a program, putting them in a scenario where they can be successful still at the major league level. And part of what I think, too, that they only have the 2 players on their list, I think they had, I mean, it was last year they had Chris Archer and Taylor Guerrieri, is that his name?
Yeah.
I think he was and I mean those two play like well actually I'm not sure right offhand off Guerrieri. I know Chris Archer obviously pitched a lot, so he lost his prospect eligibility, I believe. But he was a pretty high prospect, so he's up there. And I mean, the Rays just keep they just keep turning out talent that I think. You talked earlier about how the Royals are going to have to kind of jump into this game about getting into these huge contracts. Well, I mean, that's just not going to happen. We know that enough by now. So they're going to have to kind of take that model and just – they're going to have to start pumping out talent. It's got to – they need to have 5, 6, 7 guys on the list every time. And you know, I have faith that the Rays would be better just because I think they obviously know what they're doing. They've proven that. But at the same time, it does have to be a little disconcerting that they only have 2 on the top 101 prospects when, you know, normally they have quite a bit more. So it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out.
Well, and I mean, we can go on about the top 100. We got about 10 minutes, but I do want to talk about a couple Royals things. So if we get time here before Jason gets on, and of course we could talk to him a lot more about the top 100, but I did want to bring up a couple of things. There are one thing about doing a podcast is you're not on every day. You know, we're not Bob Fesco and you know, the Lake and Bink and those guys. We don't have the ability to say, okay, we're going to talk about this today and maybe something will happen tomorrow. If not, we'll talk about this and so on and so forth. We have to say, okay, this is what our week is. These are the things that we would have expected to have happened that haven't. So where are these things at? And it is so rare that we get something as right as we did last week. I had been wondering about Bruce Chen for a while, and I like Bruce Chen, the player. I think he's a good pitcher. He has shown a lot for as old as he is, but I was shocked that he got a major league deal. Blown away. Mm-hmm. And good money, too. And I think, Mike, you tweeted something about the starting five earlier, and I don't remember exactly what you said, but I'm not ready to believe that that top five is set, that Duffy and Ventura don't necessarily play into it as much as you had mentioned. I think, do you remember what you tweeted out as the top five?
Well, I mean, it was obviously Shields is number one. Vargas, they just signed. Obviously, he's going to be there. Guthrie as well. And comments from Ned Yost seem to indicate that Bruce Chen can do no wrong, and he's pretty much right there as the number four. So it really leaves one rotation spot, and you've got Ventura, you've got Duffy, you've got Luke Hochaver, who says he's not holding back going for it, apparently. Wade Davis, potentially, Brad Penny. People have mentioned Kyle Zimmer. I doubt he's really in the mix. I think, you know, he's going to be in AAA at best if he doesn't, you know, repeat AA. But you've still got a lot of those guys on there, and it makes it really difficult to really see who's going to end up with that fifth spot. And, you know, I think Yost also said it wouldn't be crazy to see Duffy in the bullpen. And so I don't know what it's going to end up looking like. It's you know, maybe it's just misdirection. The Royals aren't always great about saying this is how it's going to be and then it actually goes that way. But that's a lot of faith in Bruce Chen. And Chen got, you know, $3.25 million. He got a major league deal ahead of guys like Bronson Arroyo. He got it ahead of like A.J. Burnett. You know, Irvin Santana and Ubaldo Jimenez are both still out there. And granted, those guys are all going to be bigger deals.
Right. They're not taking $4 million.
But it's still, you know, for Chen to be signed to a major league deal with those guys still ahead, it's such a weird signing. It came pretty much out of nowhere. I mean, we talked about it last week, but I think it was more speculation of, okay, he's still there. And I really didn't expect anything more than like a minor league deal for him. So it was, I was pretty surprised. For the money, he's probably going to be worth it. But at the same time, you know, he's taken up a roster spot that maybe somebody else who could be better could be taken up. And so that's where the real cost to me comes in.
Don't you feel like there's got to be something going on in the front office? Like, it just, to me, it screams that something's up. Like, they're close on a deal for somebody. I just can't believe. I mean, I'm not a big Dayton Moore supporter. Don't get me wrong. I'm not a big Dayton Moore fan by any means. And Chen's most productive years have come in Kansas City. I'm looking at his baseball reference page. He's going into year 17, okay? He's had 5 years in Kansas City. It's by far the longest that he's played anywhere. In fact, this will be his sixth year. This will double the next closest, which is Atlanta and Baltimore. In Kansas City, he's 45-39 with a 4.32 ERA in 143 games. He's pitched 670 innings here. You take the 6 years he pitched in Baltimore and Atlanta and you put them together, and combined, they're only about 450. So about two-thirds what he's done here. And he's going to add more onto that. So in half, you know, in the same amount of time, he pitched, you know, half as much in those other places. In fact, the more I look at this, his entire time in the National League, which was 6 years, he pitched 441 innings. And like I said, he's already pitched 670 in 5 years. It's just, he's been successful here, but he's been bad here too. And if this is what he is, you know, if you can get either years 2010, 11, or 13 out of him, then you're great. But if you get 2009 or 2012 out of him, then you're in trouble. Mm-hmm. You know, both those years he was over a 5 ERA. The other 3 years, his worst was a 4.17 and when he was 33 in 2010. The other 2 years were 3.27 and 3.76 as far as ERA is concerned. I mean, his WAR and WHIP and stuff have been in line. He's been an okay pitcher, and he's funny, and he's good in the clubhouse, and he's everything you want on your team. But there is just not space on this team for him and Hochaver and Davis. Something has to be happening there. It just, I mean, that's four and six. What is Davis getting? He gets six, right?
Yeah, I don't know the exact number, but I mean it's like $5.5-6 million.
So you're talking between $15 and $18 million for three pitchers that could all end up in your bullpen. I mean, that's where Chen started last year. Let's be real about this. There's a chance Chen ends up in the bullpen because he doesn't make the starting rotation. And I just please be smart and leave Ho Chi over in the pen. He's so good there. I've been you know on that bandwagon for so long before it's cool to put Ho Chi over in the bullpen. And it just.
Well, I think there are a couple things that you can look at right here, and you know, or a few things, actually. So there's the first one, which is positive, which is Bruce Chen had a pretty good year last year. Mm-hmm. And in a vacuum, if you look at – he was, if I remember correctly, he was close to a two-war player last year in terms of from Fangraph perspective.
At 1.4, yeah.
Was he? Okay, I thought it was higher than that. Was that – is that –
Well, he threw 121 innings last year, so I think that limits it just because purely on innings. But the year before, even in 2012 with the 4.73 ERA, they have him as a two-war player. So
okay, maybe that's what I was thinking of. So, I mean, if you can get a two-war type player type season out of him for $3.25 million,
yeah, you're that's not a bad deal.
From a left-handed pitcher, mm-hmm. you know, that's not a bad deal at all. But it's like you guys are saying, when you take $3.25 million for Chen, $4 point whatever million, close to five for Ho Chi, and then $5.2 million
for Ho Chi.
5.2, there you go, even more. Okay, so then add that with the 5.5 for Wade Davis, and then I mean, when you combine all these moves, which you have to, because it's about building a team. It's not just about each individual move. Taken inside of a vacuum, you know. I mean, that's a component of it, but you have to take into account how this fits into the overall puzzle, and how it fits is not very good. And I think the problem is, you know, people talk about losing cultures and winning cultures and organizations and stuff, and this kind of a move right here is, it's for me, I mean, this might seem kind of taking it to the extreme, but it's like this kind of thing is why Royals are the Royals. And it's because, to me, signing Bruce Chen to this deal doesn't scream a good baseball move. It screams like a good Royals move. You know, like the Royals front office is there and they says, hey, we've got this pitcher. He's great in the clubhouse. He's a good guy. The fans like him. He had a pretty good year last year. Let's sign him up for a little bit over market. And that'll just be taken care of. We don't have to worry about it. But they don't really know what they're taking care of and what they don't have to worry about anymore. You know, it's like they put themselves in positions where they make these signings for reasons other than, you know, what they see with their eyes, what they see when they look at the stat sheet and everything like that. And I'm obviously just speculating, you know, but it seems like there's been a long enough period of these types of moves that it's a reasonable assumption to make that they don't necessarily take in just baseball factors. And sometimes, you know, you definitely need to account for off-the-field stuff. But all the same, you know, you don't want that to override what's on the field and what's best for the team on the field. And I don't know that signing Bruce Chen was the best for the 2014 Royals.
What worries me is that it also cost Emilio Bonifacio, who got designated for assignment, and it keeps that payroll right around that $89-90 million range, and it feels like it's more of a they wanted to get a guy, another pitcher, and I've wanted another pitcher all winter, you know. So I guess this is kind of careful what you wish for. I don't know, but it really feels like they could have cut just about anybody. Michael Clato's on this roster, on the 40-man roster. Why does he need to be on this roster? I mean, he's done nothing at any professional level. So, you know, some of those guys, they could have been cut ahead of Bonifacio. You could have went into spring training with him there. It's strange. I mean, it's just a weird deal for me to look at it. I mean, we've talked before about the Royals valuing some of the wrong things, and maybe that's part of it. I think Bruce Chen could have a pretty good year. The all of our projections on Fangraphs project him for 155 innings. And a 4.63 ERA, You know, that's not, or 4.31 ERA, my mistake. Not bad, you know. The Zips projection projects him for 4.42 ERA in 120 innings. They're both around one WAR, so I mean, you're going to get the value there, but it's all about what does signing Bruce Chen mean, and what do you not get to go after now? If Ervin Santana signs somewhere for 3 years and $27 million, and the Royals miss out on that because they signed Bruce Chen and they have these other contracts weighing them down, I mean, that's just terrible. I mean, that's going to be something that'll haunt them all year.
Plus, Mike, you have to – another thing that I worry about is I think it's good that the Royals are signing veteran pitchers and not trying to depend on young guys to come up and just be the guy, because I think that's gotten them in trouble in the past. But in the same respect, when you make a move like a Bruce Chen, then that's kind of one of those in-between moves where – they think he's good enough, obviously, and they want him out there, and they're paying him a decent salary. So, but these types of moves have clouded the Royals' judgment before and have stopped them from, you know, bringing up and putting in a guy that they should, rather than, you know. And again, this goes to making the proper baseball move versus making a move based on extraneous factors. So, you know, if Yordano Ventura starts the season in AAA and he just blows up and he's ready to come up, and it's May, are they going to say, well, you know, we like our bullpen, we don't want to move Bruce Chen to the bullpen, but, you know, we want to keep him as a starter, we paid him all this money, we don't want to cut him, blah, 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 they can't trade him. You know, that's asking for a bad situation. I mean, if you're gonna sign somebody that's going to be that veteran pitcher, I think you go bigger than Bruce Chen. But we've been saying that all offseason, so it's... But that's just another fear that I have that I hope doesn't come true.
Well, I agree with all of this, and it's hard to say, and I got distracted about halfway through my thought earlier, but there's a lot going on in my house right now. So, but, you know, it is what it is with family stuff. I don't hate the Chen signing, like I said, but it's not what I wanted. You mentioned, Mike, you know, that you wanted another pitcher. Well, you didn't want another number five pitcher, and this is very disconcerting to me. It just worries me with everything. So, but anyways, we've talked enough about Bruce Chen. Let's take a quick break here, and then we're going to be right back with Jason Parks.
Come to Spit Cup this week. We'll let the person who has the highest bar tab ride the bull. We don't have any TVs in our bar, but we make our own entertainment. Mondays, it's free cover charge to anybody with a gun rack in their pickup truck. Tuesdays, we've got $8 beer night. All domestic beers are on special for only $8. It's Spit Cup. Wednesdays is longest tobacco spit. Thursdays is foot fungus night. Friday night is Jamboree night. Bring your crap kick in your 10-gallon hats. And this weekend, you get our world-famous Spit Cup girls. You get to pick which one has the most teeth. It's Spit Cup. No love letters, talking to the wall.
Or you could go to Kelly's Westport Inn. The highest quality drinks with the lowest prices. You know what we do. Drinks, friends, plenty of TV showing sports. They've got all the basketball and all the baseball on. Live music on the weekends, the best pizza in Kansas City, and fun. Kelly's has the best rooftop patio in town and is voted one of the best places in Kansas City to check out the view, if you know what I mean, and maybe make a new friend. Make the best choice for your evening entertainment, Kelly's Westport Inn. Kelly's is at 500 Westport Road in Kansas City, Missouri. Kelly's Westport Inn. Somebody stands up and says we're sick of the
controlling and the silver spoon that feeds all your stories and your bowling. Welcome back into the Kansas City. Wait till you hear the outtakes. I'm having a moment today, I swear to God. We are now joined by, from Baseball Prospectus, well, I guess he's once again a podcaster, and of course he's a former podcaster with Kevin Goldstein, but Jason Parks. Mr. Parks, how are you doing today?
Mr. Parks, thank you for having me on. Thank you for calling me Mr. Parks. I feel more adult, more responsible.
It wasn't nearly as awesome as an open as what you got over at the other show on the network, the Pine Tar Press podcast. But those guys really built you up coming in. I couldn't come up with a build up as good as they did, so I just kind of let it fly.
They called him a wizard. Yeah. Is that
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Clint had sorts of fun little names for him. Clint must have been thinking about that one for a minute because he was pretty excited.
Yeah, that was great. That was a great opening.
So if you haven't already heard it, Jason was on with Pine Tar Press. One of the great things about having the Royals Podcast Network like we do now is we can pretty much talk to Jason about every quarter or so and get you all the good information between one of the shows, and that way we're not bothering Jason too much, but we're still getting the information out to Royals fans about our system and what have you. And there's nobody better out there as far as prospects go than Jason. And Jason, of course, writes for Baseball Prospectus. You can follow him on Twitter at Professor Parks. He's very funny on Twitter if you don't follow him for some reason, but he also provides a lot of good baseball information. I don't remember if we talked about this the last time we had you on or not, but of course Kevin Goldstein gets the job with the Astros. He's a good part of the reason why you work for BP, because he said, I'm going to do the podcast and Jason's going to be my partner on it. And if you guys want to carry it on BP, cool. If not, that's fine too. And of course they do. And the show goes great until Kevin kind of gets a surprise job offer from the Astros. And then you were just kind of still there, so you took over Kevin's job. Have you ever felt a lot of pressure going into that head prospect role since Kevin's been gone?
Well, I mean, I honestly didn't, and as much as I love Kevin, I always knew I was a better evaluator. So I knew that I could step up and take it over. What I wasn't 100%, you know, behind or confident was my ability to play the game a little bit. Because when I was under Kevin, I got to be a smart ass. I got to write whatever I wanted because he was carrying, you know, he had already built the skeleton here. You know, he was doing the prospect list. He was doing, you know, the national media spots. He was the one going on all the podcasts. He was the one doing all the radio. He was the one who had to really stand up for all, you know, all the prospecting stuff that we were, you know, propagating or, you know, prognosticating and standing behind. And I got to sit in the shadows and just be an asshole, you know, and that was a lot of, I mean, I got to go out to games. I got to write scouting reports. You know, I got to be me. And when I took over for him, I had no doubt that I could be the evaluator because I always felt I was a better evaluator. And he knows that too. It's the responsibility of being a mature, you know, source, of being a guy that, you know, when you say something, people don't think it's just, you know, hot air or it's where are you getting this from. You know, I had, you know, Kevin had a Rolodex full of industry sources. When I first started, I had, you know, some, but now I have, you know, as much or more as just as much as he ever had, if not more. And, you know, plus I'm still going out and seeing games. So it took a while to get into that. But I was, you know, Kevin was a really, you know, good role model in that, because when I, during the transition, he helped me with like, okay, hey, you gotta, you know, this, you gotta do these interviews and you gotta do this and you gotta stand behind this and you gotta, you know, this is the way it needs to be presented. And that, you know, he really helped with that, you know, and that, you know, I always will appreciate that.
Well, and you both roles you've been very good in. You've been very good, as you said, being the asshole, and you've been very good being the lead. And one of the things you get to do as the lead is you help put together the BP Top 101. Kansas City's part of that came out a while back, and there's seven people mentioned on it. We'll just run through the list quick, and then I'll let the guys kind of break it down with you. But there's seven guys on the list. Number 12 is Yordano Ventura, who's 23, right-handed pitcher for the Royals. Most people are familiar with him. He broke to the major leagues. 29 is Adalberto Mondesi. We call him R.A. Mondesi here. He's a shortstop, 18 years old. He also might be sent straight from heaven.
There's some biblical bloodlines there, I think.
I guess we'll stop there for a second. We do hear you really like R.A. Mondesi. That's a player you really kind of have some feelings for.
Yeah, I mean, I was able to jump on that really, really early because of all the time that I spent in Surprise watching both the Rangers and Royals camp. It's one of the reasons that the Royals are one of my favorite systems. It's because I've probably seen them, you know, way more than any national writer, you know, just because of my proximity. you know, I was able to see Ventura when he first came up. I was able to see Mondesi right, you know, in his first instructional league. And it's like, man, you know, when I get to watch that next to some of the Royals front office guys and, you know, when their mouths open, I know to open mine. in awe of the kid, but it didn't take a great evaluator to look at that kind of you know, precocious talent. When you can see a 16-year-old stand on a field with men and perform like one, and act like he belongs on that field, it doesn't, you know, you don't have to be Jason McLeod or, you know, some top-notch evaluator to get it. So I mean, I'm really high on him. I think that you know, when you look at what happened in low A, as far as like the statistical line is concerned, I mean, you know, context is so important. Look who he's facing. Look what he's doing. I mean, you can look at the numbers and be kind of cold about it, but man, he made a lot of contact for a kid his age in a full season league against guys who were throwing breaking balls, a lot of them. So, I mean, I think that he performed very, very well. I don't know how high the ceiling's going to get, but I think it's going to get pretty high. I think that because of his speed, because of his body, because of his defensive chops, anything that the bat can offer is just going to be, you know, a topping on that. And who knows where it's going to go, but that profile, the speed defensive profile, is going to carry him to the majors. If he can hit, if power comes to the game, man, that's when it really starts to get scary.
And I guess we'll just go one by one. We'll back up and go back to Yordano Ventura. I'll let Mike and Jeff take it from here. Mike?
Well, the thing, I mean, obviously the question's always with Ventura is if he's going to be able to hold up. And I know that you've expressed some skepticism in that, but the arm can't be denied. It's just a crazy arm. Now, this offseason, I think it was just last week, he was talking to one of the radio guys up here in Kansas City. Apparently, he really hasn't been throwing that much this offseason because he wants to be able to do 200 innings next year. I mean, how realistic is that, and is that even a good route for him to be taking?
Well, I mean, I think that one of the reasons I'm skeptical, just like everybody else needs to be, mm-hmm. is that he has yet to do it.
Yeah.
You know, workload, if you come to me and say, well, I have doubts about Archie Bradley being able to hold innings, I'd be like, well, why? Because he logs 150 every year. You know, he's one of those guys. The body is big. The body is strong. Yordano Ventura is not a big guy. He relies on a very whippy arm. You know, and he can hold velocity, generates well, but, you know, 170 pounds or 180 pounds, that profile is hard to hold 200 innings. And that's not a knock on Ventura, because I think I'm one of the most vocal Ventura fans. You know, I suggested that I think he's a good candidate to win the AL Rookie of the Year. I think that he can last as a starter. And you know me, if you're short and Dominican, there's no way I'm going to project you to be a starter. You know, I don't mean, if you're a Dominican, I'm not going to project you to be a starter for the most part. Most Dominicans don't end up as starters. But I believe in Ventura. You know, I love the way that the arm generates the power. I love the explosiveness of the fastball. I mean, it's just, again, it doesn't take a good evaluator to notice that. I mean, his arm is faster than everybody else. His best pitch hasn't even developed yet. You know, his changeup could be all world. We don't know. I mean, I am just really getting in the abstract here, but, you know, when you have fingers that long and when you have a fastball that explosive, hitters have to, you know, because it has so much movement and it's got so much explosive pop on it because of his extension and the way he releases the ball, hitters have to cheat to get to that pitch. And when hitters start to cheat to get to a ball and you offer them something with the same arm slot and the same arm speed,
they're dead.
Except they're gone.
Yeah.
And this is one of the reasons that, you know, guys like Verlander, he didn't have a changeup. You know, his changeup became a monster. Look at Max Scherzer. This guy didn't have a very good changeup. And then his fastball really starts to get bats moving. The changeup becomes a monster. Mm-hmm. If you can remain consistent, you know, power arms have the best chance to develop these type of monster changeups. It just, they come a little bit later. You know, you see a lot of finesse guys who develop the changeup early. Power guys tend to come late with it. With Ventura, if he can stay in a rotation and stay, you know, physically fit and healthy, man, his changeup could be the difference maker. Right? As much as his curveball is good, his changeup could be the money pitch for him. And if that happens, I think we're looking at something pretty special here.
Jason, you talked about how his body, there's always a question when you have someone of his size with that 170, 180 pound, 5'10", 5'11" frame. So my question is, when it comes to that type of frame, I mean, it seems to make sense. Like, okay, you know, the smaller player might not necessarily hold up, you know, from a, you know, athletic standpoint for as long as someone who's a, who's bigger or whatever, you know, but I guess, can, is there something you can elaborate on that in terms of, you know, why, what it is exactly that makes a smaller frame harder to project over that long time? Because I like to think that, you know, you see a lot of different training programs out there, and you would think that you could make training programs that would kind of allow smaller players to work past that wall, if you will. And then, you know, are there programs like that out there, and what can be done for someone like Yordano Ventura to get to that point where even though he's small, he can still be that 200-inning guy per year?
That's a good question. I think that it's obviously going to be player-specific, but I don't think it's always a size issue. I think it's an athleticism issue. I mean, obviously, what happens with pitchers is as they fatigue, their mechanics start to break down. And when mechanics start to break down, that's when the command goes, and that's when pitchers can get hurt. I think a lot of the times when you see a guy who's a very whippy guy who doesn't have a lot of, you know, obviously his lower body is not generating a ton of power. He does a lot with his arms. He's got a torque-heavy kind of delivery where he brings his hip rotation into it. You know, he's not a guy who's like Nolan Ryan, who's driving on those, you know, cattle herders. You know, it's more of an upper body type of delivery. And so what you want to see is a guy who can repeat his next, well, who can repeat mechanics? Guys who are athletic. You know, athleticism in pitchers gets kind of thrown aside because there's so many bad-bodied pitchers. Well, you can be athletic and have a bad body. If you can repeat your mechanics, you have a better chance of being successful than a guy who is, you know, looks the part 6'3", 180, who just isn't that athletic and can't repeat. You know, so I think athleticism is very important. I think conditioning in that regard is important. I think I'm a fan of throwers. You know, I think that throwing keeps pitchers healthy. I'm a big fan of that. I'm a big fan of throwing year round. I know that some people will take time off, but I think that when you shut down arms, you can run the risk of, you know, of injury just as much as if you're throwing. I mean, I think that pitchers who throw, and I've known a lot of them, and they'll talk about this. The more you throw, you know, the stronger your arm gets, the more comfortable you are with throwing year round, so that when you do start the season and that workload does start, you don't become overwhelmed and fatigue early. So hearing that Ventura's not throwing, for me, scares me just a little bit because I'm a big fan of pitchers throwing year-round. I mean, I've just been around a lot of pitchers, like Robbie Irwin's a good example. You know, when the Padres wanted him to shut down for a couple of weeks, I mean, he struggled with it because the kid likes to throw. You know, he throws in between starts. He throws in between bullpen sessions. One of my good friends is a former pitcher, and he said, I never got hurt, but I never stopped throwing. I never stopped throwing. I always throw. So I kind of come from that school. And it's not a right or wrong thing. It's just my preference. But, you know, I want to see guys throw. I want to see really, really strong arms. I want to see fluid mechanics. And I want to see athleticism to maintain that fluidity and delivery. So if he can do those things, you know, yeah, I'd still rather him not be 5'10", 170. But, I mean, if he can make it work, who am I to say? I don't really care what the package looks like as long as he has those characteristics.
As you're talking about athleticism, and one of the more athletic guys that the Royals have is Kyle Zimmer, you know, obviously former infielder and late converter to pitching. But he's had, you know, the elbow with the bone spurs and the chips and whatnot, and you know, his shoulder kind of fatigued last year. Is that anything to be concerned about, or is that just going to be something that he has to work through this year?
Well, I mean, I think the Royals would tell you there's nothing to see here, where I think other teams will tell you that it's a red flag for them. And partially, part of that is because they're not looking at the medicals. You know, the Royals are the ones who get to see the medicals. The Royals are the ones who've had the shoulder examined. But anytime a pitcher gets shut down for, you know, precautionary measures because of a shoulder, yeah, it's going to concern some people, especially with a guy who really hasn't been pitching all that long. And I don't know if you've noticed this, but conversion guys get hurt a lot. You know, so guys who have become pitchers from position players tend to get hurt in the first couple of years that they do it. I'm not saying that that's happening. I'm just saying it's quite common. I like Zimmer. You know, I don't like him, I guess, as much as some people. I don't think he's a front-line guy. I think that, you know, he could pitch it as a number two, a number three in a rotation. But, you know, I don't – you know, some of my concerns about him have to do with, you know, his command and the divisibility of his fastball. I mean, I've just seen too many average hitters square him up. And I just, you know, I'm trying to project here. You know, when I'm watching him face double-A guys or high-A guys or even low-A guys and they're squaring him, I have to look at what a major league bat would do to this guy. You know, that's where I'm trying to be in my thoughts. So that's why sometimes I'm a little harder on Zimmer because, yeah, I've seen him shove it again and crush him, and I get that. But I'm trying to think about what he's facing when he faces, you know, some of the best bats in baseball. What, you know, how quickly they pick up the ball, how few mistakes you can make and survive. I mean, I like his curveball. His changeup's all right. I think it gets overrated a little bit. I mean, we've actually seen what it can do yet because he hasn't faced that sort of competition. But the fastball, it does give me some concern because it can be a little bit straight, and he can show a little bit much of it in his delivery, and there's not enough deception there. And, you know, it's a minor thing. I'm being extra picky, but I think that's my job. And as much as I like Zimmer, I'm not ready to say that he's – I mean, it just floors me that people think he's better than Ventura. I just don't see that at all. I don't see that on any level, not on any single level, except if he's got a bigger body.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not Dominican, as far as I know.
Right. Jeff, who you got?
On the list is a guy who we've kind of tracked and we've been talking about over the last couple of years is Miguel Almonte, and he's jumped to number 46 now on the list, and on a lot of the different prospect lists, he's kind of jumped up. And I look at...
Funny, that happened.
I know you're a fan of his, and my question is, he looks like it says he is 6'2". 160. So is he a guy, like, what is he going to have the same kind of reservations and concerns as Ventura because he's got that slight frame, or is he just someone who maybe is going to fill out a little bit more? I mean, is that someone that you see projecting into more of a workhorse, or is that something he's going to battle with just like Ventura might for his career?
He's probably going to battle. I think he's probably closer to 180 than 160, just because, I mean, he's a skinny guy, but he's not like, I mean, Ventura up until, you know, a year ago, you were like, wow, you are thin. You know, you are a thin human. Almonte is not quite that thin. He's more, I just call his build lanky. You know, he's kind of lanky. To me, he's built like Julio Teheran with the Braves. That's just kind of what he reminds me of. With the witty arm, the 6'2", 170, 180, athletic, you know, pitches off the fastball, backs up with a really good changeup, doesn't have a breaking ball that blows you away yet, but you like the arm enough to keep going with him. That's the pitcher that he reminds me of the most. And when I saw him first time on the backfield, that really stood out. I remember having a conversation with a scout in the parking lot afterwards going, man, that guy's changed really good. Do you like that? And he was like, yeah, you know, I love the way that the arm works. I think he's just going to get better. Let's see what happens with the breaking ball. And fast forward a year and a half, and we're still talking about that. But, you know, when you have that sort of body, he's got feel. He's got feel for pitching. He's got a real aptitude for it. And so I think he's going to be able to settle. He throws a slider and a curveball. I actually like the curveball more. The slider, to me, doesn't really work as well with his arm, but I think that if he can just get one of those to play, and I was speaking with a guy on the Royals developmental staff about this, and they're like, well, we think that he's going to get one to play. You know, we think he can get to average. And you back that up with a fastball that's 92, 96, I mean, almost every night. And in burst, I've seen him 95, 96 for like one inning stints. He's got a crazy good arm, and that changeup has got it's almost like a forkball at times. So, you know, you can go a long way with that. And if he can get one of those pitches, one of those breaking balls to play to average, then he's a mid-rotation starter, easy.
Another pitcher that we want to talk about, Sean Manaea, kind of an unknown just because he didn't pitch last year at the pro level, coming off of surgery and a couple of different injuries, but reportedly was throwing a little bit in October, and I think he's working on a program now in Arizona. Can he get back to what he had in the Cape Cod League, or are some of these little injuries going to, you know, kind of hold him back for a year or two?
Well, that's a good question. First of all, we'll address his health. He's healthy. He pitched in the Instructional League. The Royals told me that he's going to be ready to go. The hip is fine. The shoulder is fine. And that, you know, he could go right to full season baseball. To me, that tells me that even if he starts and extended for a little bit and then goes to full season, that they see this as a full season pitcher in 2014. So that, to me, tells me that they think he's healthy.
He's healthy, yeah.
Now, let's go back to just who this guy is. One of my good friends is a scout in the Cape, and what he did there will change this guy's life, basically, because he thinks that it's one of the best pitchers he's ever seen in that level. And it created this world where that is now possible, okay? And so once you realize that that's possible, once you realize that the stuff that he showed on the Cape is real, like that he can get that again, holy hell, that opens up a whole other, you know, line of thought. But now let's go back to what happened that following spring. Let's go back to he just didn't have the same results, battling different injuries, of course, but wasn't the same pitcher. So if you can get the Manaea that was once the 1-1 candidate, like a legitimate 1-1 candidate, and that guy comes back with the electric fastball, the breaking ball that just buckles knees, and, you know, the changeup that he can turn over and get bat swinging on it, that's a frontline guy. That's a dangerous pitcher. Now, we haven't really seen that guy since the Cape. We've seen flashes of it, and I know a lot of teams that had him on their 1-1 follow list and checked him off pretty early in spring. You know, there were the injury concerns, and then he just wasn't bringing it. You know, the velocity dipped, breaking ball wasn't the same, command wasn't the same. If you chalk that up to just injury and he comes back full and he's the Cape version again, man, look out. But, you know, we haven't seen that yet. Until we do, I think that we need to temper a bit. I mean, obviously I ranked him high in the system. I put him high on the 101 just because I know what can happen.
Yeah.
And I think just the idea of that sort of magic reality of like, hey, this happened before, maybe it can happen again. I like that. I think that you can sell that, and you know, based on what I do, I like that. I like living in that world where that could happen again. Maybe it won't, and we'll adjust accordingly, but maybe it does.
I too like living in that world. but my question is, so I mean, that's, you know, this magic reality, as you said, that obviously is absolute best case scenario. So even if it's not best case scenario, but it's still pretty good, and he still shows to be somebody with electric stuff, even if it's not that, you know, once every few years type of thing, how quickly can someone like that move through the system, and specifically obviously the Royals system, because it, you know, there hasn't been somebody really recently that has kind of just blown through the Royals system. Like Kyle Zimmer has moved through relatively quickly. So I mean, how someone like Manaea, because there's been articles by I think it was Jeffrey Flanagan for Fox Sports, I believe, that said that he could be rotation candidate for 2015. So I mean, is that realistic?
Yeah, it is.
With what he's got.
Yeah, it is. But see, that would require that magic we just spoke about to actually happen. If that magic doesn't happen, then he's going to be battling injury. He's going to be battling, you know, effectiveness. And he's not going to roll that quickly. But if he's healthy and he starts shoving it the way that he shoved it in the Cape, you know, there's no way that the low minors are going to hold him. He finishes 2014 near the AA level, or he starts there in 2015, and then he finds a way, you know, to compete for a roster spot at some point during that year. You know, I think that's entirely possible, but it depends on a healthy and effective arm, you know. If you start to see like, oh man, you know, he's a tick down, or he's just not there yet, then I think you get people talking about how maybe he's more of a bullpen arm because of the mechanics, you know, and he could still be a seventh inning guy, but they didn't take him when they did and take that chance when they did for a bullpen arm. They think that they've got the real deal here, and they may be right, but we just don't know yet.
All right, and we're talking here with Jason Parks of Baseball Perspectives. We're going to have to kind of rapid fire these last two because Jason's got to get to our interview tonight. So we got two more here on the top 100 for the Royals. The Royals got a nice system, of course, coming back to being one of those top systems like they were a couple years ago when Moustakas and Hosmer and everybody came up. And that, of course, cleaned out the system a little bit. The last two guys remaining are two offensive guys, something that the Kennedy definitely needs is guys that can hit. First off, number 96 is Hunter Dozier. He's potentially a shortstop, about 22 years old. When he got to single A with Bubba Starling, who doesn't make the list and we won't have time to talk about today, when he gets to down with Bubba, all of a sudden he seems to give Bubba a little more power, or Bubba seems to be a little bit better. Is that just something that I'm making up, or did Hunter Dozier actually give protection to Bubba Starling and make him a better player?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's possible. I think that Starling just had a better second half. I think that, you know, he made some adjustments, and that's what you want to see from a top athlete. I mean, I think everybody's still going to have some concerns about Starling, and rightfully so. But I think that he just made some adjustments, and obviously having a, you know, a more complete hitter in the lineup didn't hurt. I mean, Dozier can hit. He can flat out hit a baseball. He's actually from my hometown in Texas, so I got to give him a little extra love. I'm not sure he's a shortstop. You know, this is very generic, and I know people hate this, but if you ask about this guy, they'll just tell you, man, that he is a baseball player. You know, and that can translate to, hey, just because I don't think he can play shortstop long-term or I think he's a better fit for third, don't count this guy out because he can just play baseball. You can probably put him anywhere in the diamond and he's going to make plays. You know, he's just got a really good feel for the game. I think he's going to hit. I mean, I don't think he's going to hit for a ton of power, but I think he's going to hit for average. I think he's going to be able to hit 15, 20 bombs. You know, I think he's going to have a mature approach. I think he's going to play good left-side defense, mostly at third, but if he can play short for a little bit, that's fine too. He's a good player. You know, when he was popped, there was a little curious. I mean, I thought he was a first-round guy, but I didn't think he was a top-tier guy. And so when that happened, my first thought was like, you know, this is for another player down the line. And then, you know, obviously they were able to pop Manaea with and really pay him. So, I mean, you have to look at that as a package deal as far as the draft when we were talking about draft grades. So I like what they did, man. I like that. I think he's a first-round talent. I think that he's got a good stick. I think he's really going to hit next year, and he'll probably rise through the ranks relatively quickly. I mean, the low minors aren't going to offer much for him.
And the last person on the list was at number 99 was Jorge Bonifacio, and I was disappointed to see the Royals release or a DFA. Emilio Bonifacio. I was really hoping to get the brothers Bonifacio up on the same diamond at the same time. But what can you say about him? Last year he was looking to have kind of a breakout year, and then kind of got derailed by a hand injury. You know, what's he looking at this year, and what's a timetable for him as a viable possible candidate for the major leagues?
I mean, the hand injury that happened to him, those really sap you with the bat. Because, I mean, hitting is about the hands. And, you know, once you lose some of the speed, some of the power, some of the flexibility in your hand, it can really affect how you hit. And I thought he hit pretty well. I have a problem when I'm talking about projection with him, just because he can struggle if you really throw a spin at him. I mean, he can really struggle with curveballs, and he can really struggle with, you know, fading changeups. I think he hits sliders a little bit better. I get a little bit concerned about his overall feel for hitting. Throw out like the stats. I when he's gone up against really good arms, I've seen some struggle. I don't know if there's just a natural hitter there. I kind of see him as more of a 260, 270 type of corner outfielder that could hit 20 home runs. I mean, that's a nice player to have under team control for a while, but it's not really the guy that you target after the fact. You know, for the most part. So, you know, in the short term, if you can develop that guy from your academy and your minor league system, and you can get that sort of production out of him, which I think is what the top production you could get, you're going to take that all day long. But once that guy starts to become expensive, then you start looking for other options. But in the short term, I think he's obviously a top 101 player. Do have some concerns about the feel for hitting, but I mean, you have to like his combination of size and strength because he's really strong.
Well, we want to thank Jason for coming on today. Jason, like I said, has got to get to a radio interview. Jason, who are you on the air with tonight so they can look up more on that podcast for more information from you?
It's not a podcast. I have a spot on a Chicago radio station so I can talk about how awesome the Cubs are over and over again.
Nice. they have a lot in your top 100, so I know I meant that it was a radio spot, but maybe they'll post it and people can check it out there, because obviously that'll be long over by the time this gets posted. We want to thank Jason for coming on. Jason's been a longtime supporter of our show, and without him and Kevin coming on in the early days, I don't know who we'd have had as guests. So once again, the top 100, go check it out at BP. I got a big favor to ask of you, though.
Sure.
I'm going for the MLB Fan Cave this year,
and
I am. I'm going to take a shot at it. So, if you could do me a favor and just say something like, "I'm Jason Parks," and you know, whatever, you know, vote Royal Man for the MLB Fan Cave.
I am Jason Parks, and if you don't vote Royal Man for the Fan Cave, then I'm going to come and hang out in the Fan Cave.
There you go. Thank you, Jason, so much for coming on with us. I mean, we can talk to Jason for hours.
Every time.
And you know it. And, hey, when are you getting to Arizona?
March the 1st.
Okay, I'll get in touch with you before I get down there on the 3rd, because we're coming down the 3rd for a couple of days.
Absolutely. So. Yeah, let's go have some beers or something.
Let's do that. We haven't done that since Kansas City, and that'll be a good time. So
absolutely.
Once again, Jason Parks, Baseball Prospectus. Go spend $5 a month and get the best baseball information that's out there and all of Jason's work. But the 101 is free, so go check it out on Baseball Prospectus. Thanks again, Jason.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Let's take a quick break, and we'll reset ourselves and come back and get us cleaned up and ended as far as we're going.
Trying a moment.
Yeah, well, there was so much more I wanted to ask him about. I wanted to ask him about his Jason Adams comments on Pine Tar Press. You can definitely go check them out. I mean, there was a lot. There was, when he told me we only had 20 to 30 minutes tonight, I kind of cried inside. I had flashbacks.
That might have been the shortest Parks interview we've ever had.
No. The one in the
–
Yeah, we used to have the 15-minute ones in the Ice House.
Because all our interviews were 15 minutes back in when we had Gunnerk as the producer.
I'll see if I can find the episode now as we talk all over each other. I'll see if I can find the episode from when we were at the Ice House and we had him and –
It was Bob Kendrick.
Yes.
How did we keep that show to an hour?
And we ended up having Kendrick in studio the next week, and we just listened to Kendrick tell stories for an hour.
Absolutely. No better way to spend a Sunday.
A lot of good stuff from Jason Parks, as always, and Jason's a great guy. And, of course, we were talking about the Vote Royal Man thing, www.voteroyalman.com. We're at about 1050 on the views. We want to keep that going up. Also, hit the thumbs up if you can. People are asking me what that actually equates to, and right now I don't know. They're going to name the top 50 about February 22nd, I believe. And once they name that, then it'll be a much more structured thing. But right now we're just showing I am the guy for the Fan Cave. And we want to get the Royals represented. And there's me and another guy, Charles, and I forget his last name offhand, but he's done some work for me on the images you'll see on Twitter at KC Royal Man. Of course, you can follow Mike at Michael Engel and Jeff at the Jeff Report and the show at KC Baseball Vault. But Charles has done some work for me, too, so check out the Vote Charles hashtag as well. We'd love to get two Royals fans in the top 50, because essentially the top 50 is one from every team and 20 wild cards. And so there's definitely room for two of us, and then when you get down to the top 30, that can be multiple. That doesn't have to be one from every team, but it can be multiples from teams. Same with the top 9. I don't think it's ever happened that more than one has gotten in from the same team in the top 9. But check it out, voteroyalman.com. I'm very pleased with how this has turned out. I'm going to be really surprised if I don't make the top 50. I feel like we've, as a group on Twitter and Facebook and everywhere else, I think the Vote Royal Man team has done a good job. So we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back with Mike and Jim Callis, and then we're going to come back and just wrap everything up. So we'll be right back on the other side.
Hi, this is Ned Beaudet for Kelly's Westport Inn. Summertime is here. And that means one thing. Your neighbor's cat sneaks over and craps in your garden. No, of course I'm just joking. Summer also means my neighbor borrowing your boat trailer and driving it into Smithville Lake, or mosquitoes, or your three-year-old drinking the air conditioner water. Haha, I guess what I'm saying here is that summer means different things to different people. And for 65 years, Kelly's Westport Inn has been a vacation for those summer problems ever since Randall Kelly poured his first frosty draft in 1947. 102 degrees and 99% humidity? Don't worry, Kelly's is air-conditioned and the drinks are as cold as ice. And when the heat breaks, Randall's rooftop is ready for you to kick back, where you can head downstairs for some of the best live music in town. Summer is different things to different people, but to everyone in Kansas City, Kelly's Westport is your summertime bar. I'm Ned Badette for Kelly's Westport Inn. We'll leave the taps on for you.
And welcome to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. Right now, our guest is going to be Jim Callis. You would know him from Twitter, Jim Callis MLB. But most importantly, MLBPipeline.com and MLB.com. Jim, thank you for taking some time to talk to us about Royals prospects tonight.
Oh, no problem. Glad to be here, Michael.
Now, we just saw some of the top 100 lists start to come out. It's that time of year. You know, we're waiting for spring training to start. My first question is really, how do you really narrow down a list of prospects throughout all of the minor leagues into an actual top 100?
The nice thing is you're not doing it from scratch. It's kind of something you build up to throughout the whole year. You know, covering the draft, covering the prospects during the year. You're talking to people, you know, going back, I guess, probably as early as spring training, seeing guys in games, you know, talking to people about what's going on during the season. You know, the draft guys obviously factor in. You talk to people about them. So, I mean, you have a decent amount of history with these guys if you were. You know, a lot of the guys, unless they're new to, just fresh out of the draft, you have history with in the past. So it's nice. You're not starting from scratch. You've spent hours and hours writing and covering prospects during the season, and now you're just kind of putting them all into a list before the next season starts.
And the Royals got four prospects on that list, and they're names that, you know, any hardcore Royals fan already knows a little bit about. They're familiar names. And right off the bat, the top two prospects that you guys ranked on MLBPipeline.com were among Royals prospects were Kyle Zimmer and Yordano Ventura. In fact, you put them ranked as the fourth best starting pitching prospect duo. And they're both fairly close to the major leagues. So for a team like the Royals, who has had some trouble developing starting pitching, are these guys the real deal? Are these guys pitchers that the Royals and Royals fans can pin some hopes on for a change?
Well, I think you definitely pin some hopes on them. I do think they're the real deal. I mean, pitching prospects are always hard to project, but I mean, these guys have, you know, frontline starter stuff. And I mean, it's no secret. I mean, the Royals have had a lot more success signing and developing hitters than they have pitchers, you know, which led to the Will Myers trade a year ago. But these are two guys who could pitch at the front of a rotation. I think Kyle Zimmer actually is probably a little bit underrated. I think sometimes fans look at guys' minor league numbers when, you know, especially when they're just starting out their career like Zimmer is. You have to look at stuff. And, yeah, you know, he had a 4.82 ERA in high Class A last year. But, I mean, he struck out 140 guys in 109 innings last year. He finished strong in Double A. You know, this is a guy who's got one of the best curveballs in the minor leagues. He's got an easy plus, it's probably a double plus fastball at times. He's got some aptitude for changeup. He's really athletic. He throws strikes. I really like Kyle Zimmer an awful lot. And, you know, Yordano Ventura, I mean, it's been kind of fun to watch him develop. I mean, here's a guy who is about 5'11" and threw in the mid 80s when they signed him out of the Dominican. And now 5 years later, I mean, he's regularly, you know, hitting 100 miles an hour during games. He's improved his breaking ball. I think that's really the key is maintaining. He made a lot of strides with his curveball this year, or last year, I guess we're in 2014 now. It's just, you know, keeping that. And if he does, I mean, I think you're looking at, you know, long-term, Zimmer's the number one starter in Kansas City and Ventura's number two.
And along with Zimmer, a lot of what we noticed last year was it wasn't really until later in the year. It was like his last four starts with Wilmington, he made a little bit of an adjustment and pretty much steamrolled the rest of everybody he faced until they gave him his promotion to Double A, and he started right off hot again there. Do you think any part of this has to do with kind of his late introduction to pitching full time, or is he athletic enough that he can learn on the job quickly enough to maybe be in Omaha and maybe be a late, maybe a September call up, maybe an August call up for the Royals this year in 2014?
I think it's more the latter. I think this guy's athletic. I think he's learned very quickly. I really think, you know, his early season woes where he had a little shoulder tightness. I guess he had a little shoulder tightness at the end of season two. But, you know, he had the bone chips removed from his elbow in the off season. I mean, these aren't major things, but I just think it took him a little while to get right. And I agree with you. I'll be surprised if we don't see him in Kansas City at some point this year. And, you know, I mean, you're talking about a very advanced college pitcher. Those guys can move quick. If you told me he was up, you know, shortly before the All-Star break, I think that's even a possibility. I love his stuff, the athleticism, the ceiling. He's going to be a very special pitcher, I think.
And with Ventura, the question on him is always going to be, is he going to be enough of a pitcher to hold up over a full starting schedule? He talked to Josh Vernier of 610 Sports last week during some of the FanFest activities. And apparently he's really been eyeing 200 innings as his goal. I think last year he had about 145 innings. Is 200 within reach, or is this something more like he's got to just take the next step to 170, 180 and see how he holds up over a full season?
Yeah, I think it's more. I think the Royals would probably, you know, counting the big leagues, I think he pitched 150 innings last year. You know, I think that you probably want him to go about 175, 180. I mean, he's only going to be 22 when he opens the season. I don't think you need to. I mean, that might be a goal to show his durability, but I don't think the team's necessarily looking to pile 50 more innings on him. You know, I think you could give him, you know, something on the lines of 30 starts and 180 innings and go from there. And you're right. I mean, that is going to be the question. I mean, he's not a big guy, so scouts are always going to wonder about his durability. But the good thing is it's not like he's throwing 100 miles an hour with just a ton of effort in his delivery. I mean, he does it fairly easily. He's got a quick arm more than just throwing his whole body into his delivery. So that's important. But, you know, I mean, that is going to be a question that people are going to have about him until he goes out and does that. Although, I mean, the good news, I think, is, you know, last year, you know, he pitched 150 innings and he still, you know, had pretty good stuff down the stretch in AAA and in September with Kansas City.
And the other two prospects that cracked your top 100, you know, Raul Adalberto Mondesi, which is, we call him R.A. Mondesi for short. Just,
I like that.
It makes it a lot easier for us. And Jorge Bonifacio, these are two guys, you know, Bonifacio is probably a little closer, but Mondesi definitely is really exciting in a lot of ways, not only because I think most everybody thinks he's going to stick at shortstop, but, you know, if he has even moderate power, this is going to be easily probably a four-tool guy with a little bit of pop. I mean, are these guys within reach? Are these all-star caliber guys, or are they going to be just very good regulars when they get to Kansas City?
I think Mondesi, to me, has an all-star type of ceiling. He's obviously, you know, he's both advanced and far away. I mean, he opened last season in low class A as a 17-year-old and held his own, although he's not, you know, he's probably a good two or three years away from the big leagues. So, I mean, you're talking, you know, I think he's going to have average powers, what scouts keep, you know, keep telling me. I mean, you could be looking at plus defender, plus arm, plus runner, pretty good hitter, average power. I mean, that's an all-star shortstop. You know, Bonifacio, I think the question is going to be, I think he's more of a solid regular. I think he can hit, you know, the question is he's got kind of a flat swing, which is great for line drive contact. It doesn't necessarily lead itself to home run power. And if this guy's playing right field, which is where he projects, I mean, the home run power is going to dictate whether you're an all-star. I see him more as a solid regular, but I do like him. He does have some strength. He does have some bad speed. And it's possible. I mean, again, we're talking about a young guy who didn't turn 20 until the middle of last season. Yeah, you know, maybe you know, he's got plenty of time to make some adjustments. Maybe he will add some loft to his swing and you know, just start hitting for more power. So I think, you know, that he's got that power potential in him, but just the way his swing is built right now, it doesn't lend itself to a lot of power.
And a couple of guys that didn't quite make it, but a lot of people are paying attention to. First of all, Miguel Almonte, who kind of came out of nowhere last year and just jumped into everybody's you know, top 20, even top 10 in some spots. You know, really good fastball, really good changeup. And now he's going to be going to Wilmington, which is, I can't imagine what his numbers are going to look like. But you've said that, you know, he still kind of needs a breaking ball to develop. Do you see that this being a good environment for that kind of adjustment to be made?
Yeah, I mean, he needs to be challenged. I mean, he really didn't have any trouble at all with low class A at age 20. And, you know, what you like about him is, I mean, he's not just a, you know, guy with a good arm. I mean, he does have a good arm. He can touch 96, 97 miles an hour, throws a lot of strikes, has really good feel for changeup. I think the changeup has, you know, probably a plus pitch when all is said and done. And that's enough. You know, if you have any kind of good off-speed pitch in lower minors, you can really deal. You know, he's going to need that breaking ball to combat right-handers, you know, at the upper levels. And, you know, he I think he's tried various grips, and that's the point of emphasis. But, you know, he's definitely ready for high class A. And I think that's a, you know, that's a good place for him this year.
And the other guy that just barely missed, and the more video I watch of this guy and the more I read about him, the more I just start to dream a little bit. It's Sean Manaea, who is unknown because he didn't pitch last year because of the hip problem. But the Royals think he's completely healthy. Do you see him being able to recapture the ability that he had, that he showed at the Cape Cod League? Or is he going to still kind of sit around that 92, 93 velocity and have to kind of work back up to it?
Well, we really don't know until we see him out on the mound. Because, I mean, he had a – when he was in the Cape 2 years ago in the summer, he was throwing 94, 96 miles an hour with an above-average slider. And last year, I mean, he wasn't hurt right away. I mean, he was – he had a – twisted an ankle like celebrating a dramatic win, which I think was a bang-bang play where a guy got thrown out of the plate on a attempt to score on a wild pitch. And then the ankle led to hip problems. And then the shoulder, you know, he's had the hip surgery. He should come back. But even before he got hurt, he wasn't lighting it up like he was on the Cape. Now, that said, the guy's pitching most of his, you know, he's in Indiana State. You know, I live in Chicago. I mean, the weather up here is not that great in the early spring. So typically the pitchers in this region aren't really at their best until, you know, May and June roll around. And in his case, he was hurt by then. So, I mean, the Royals obviously think he's going to get back to where he was. I mean, they gave him $3.55 million. But I don't see any reason why he couldn't get that back. It wasn't like he had an arm injury and you're worried about us getting stuff back. It was just, my hat is off to him, because a lot of guys in his situation would have been very tempted. Look, I'm not 100%. I'm gonna shut it down and get healthy because I'm going to be a pretty good draft pick. He didn't miss a start until the conference tournament when he had a little bit of shoulder tightness. He pitched through all this, and he ranked among the NCAA leaders in ERA and strikeouts per nine innings. He went out there trying to help his team. So my hat's off to him. You know, things could have played out a little bit differently for him. I mean, obviously it worked out financially, but, you know, a lot of guys would have just said, you know what, I'm not going to risk injury. And he tried to pitch through it. So I don't, you know, he's got a big, strong frame. The hip's healthy. I don't see any reason he can't get back. You know, and not only did he throw hard, but his fastball just had so much life. The guys just couldn't make any contact with it. It was ridiculous.
Another guy, obviously, I think Manaea is going to be connected to this guy at least until one of them separates. Hunter Dozier, the first pick in that draft by the Royals, who a lot of people really did not like. A lot of critics of that pick turned out to look like a pretty good gambit for them. MLBPipeline.com put him as one of the top 10 third base prospects. A, is he going to be able to continue the success he started last year? And B, is he going to stay at third base, or do you see him moving more towards a corner outfield spot or anything like that?
Yeah, you know, it's like, and I'm not just saying this. I actually did like him. Maybe I was in the minority, but I did. When I was at Baseball America, I was at Baseball America until September and had been there for a long time. I did all of our Midwest draft coverage. So I had Hunter Dozier in my region. I liked him. We had him as a projected first-round pick, not going number 8, although obviously there was some gamesmanship there to get the money to sign Manaea. And the thing was, Hunter Dozier wasn't going to be around for pick 34. It's not like the Royals could have picked these guys in reverse order, because the Tampa Bay Rays were definitely going to take Hunter Dozier. They had two first-round picks. He was getting more and more play as the draft approached, and whereas the Rays thought they were going to get him at the end of the first round, they're going to have to take him more with their pick towards the middle of the first round. And there was even some thought that the Diamondbacks might have taken him at number 15. This guy, there's absolutely no reason he can't play third base, and I think he's going to be a good third baseman. He played shortstop in college. He's a big guy, 6'4", 220, so it really was going to be a long-term shortstop. But he moves well. You know, he's got a strong arm. He pitched. He had a low 90s fastball. And he can really hit. I mean, he controls the strike zone, hits for average, has power. I really like him a lot. You know, again, was he the eighth best player in the draft? I wouldn't say that, but you know what they did made a lot of sense, and I think this guy is the real deal. I really do like Hunter Dozier.
Another guy that, I mean, we have to talk about being Royals fans because we're looking for any kind of hope. Bubba Starling, obviously it hasn't gone as well as we had hoped, especially considering his signing bonus. There's been a lot of talk about Russell Wilson and Jameis Winston and some of these two sports stars, and Bubba, obviously two sports star, but the baseball side, he's, you know, had some flashes, but is what percentage would you say he's going to be able to reach his potential and reach those expectations that a lot of people had when he was drafted originally?
Well, I think it's a small percentage he's going to reach his full potential, what people thought he was going to be. I mean, this is a guy who's worth, you know, got $7.5 million out of draft, which is more than any high school player ever. So, I mean, his potential, what people thought he was going to be, was this massive five-tool center fielder. Now, there was some question, you know, like how much time was it going to take him to hit? You know, nobody, I didn't, as much as people loved him, I don't think anybody thought he was going to come into pro ball and hit right off the bat. He came from small town in Kansas, didn't face a lot in the way of competition. You know, the swing could get long. You know, has his progress at this point been disappointing? Yeah, I think you'd have to say it has. But I do think, you know, I don't think he's ever necessarily going to be a guy who hits for a lot of average. But he did make some progress, you know, drawing some walks last year. He does have power. I mean, maybe he's a Mike Cameron type of center fielder where he's a lower average but good power, can run, steal some bases, and play good defensive center field. I think there's still a good chance that Bubba Starling can be a solid regular. I don't think he's necessarily going to be the superstar that you'd think you were hoping to get when you spent the number five pick and $7.5 million on him. But I still think this guy can be a solid regular. I mean, the tools are pretty good, and he can just hit a little bit. You know, everything else is going to be fine.
And I just want to get your opinion on a couple of players that don't get a lot of press. The first one is Elia Hernandez, who has since pretty much been overshadowed by Mondesi. They signed within about a week of each other, I believe. And nobody really seems to talk about him. He has spent a couple of stints at Idaho Falls. Last year showed a lot more, at least in the numbers. Is he somebody that the Royals are going to kind of get what they expected when they signed him?
Well, again, it's tough to live up to that because he got $3 million. He was one of the more expensive international signings that year. So, if you know, I don't know if he'll necessarily live up to that. But, I mean, the thing is with him, and I know you know this, I mean, he only turned 19 after the season. He's still really young. I mean, he did have a solid year. You know, Pioneer League is a hitter's league, but he's young for that league at 19. You know, just tremendous bat speed. I think there's going to be some power there. He's going to have to cut down the strikeouts. He's got some arm strength. I mean, you know, is he going to be the superstar that bonus might have connoted? I don't know about that. But again, the tools are there for him to be a solid regular. I mean, this guy could hit for some solid average and power, and he's athletic enough to be a good right fielder.
The other guy that I want to get your opinion on is Christian Benford, who just fades in behind, you know, you've got Zimmer, you've got Ventura, you've even got Jason Adam, and I think he – and Almonte, I should mention. But Benford is – he doesn't get a lot of press either, but I think he's another guy that shows really good control. Does he profile as anything just filling out a rotation, or is he just going to be somebody that the Royals hope they can hit on?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's more of a back of the rotation guy. But again, I mean, well, on one hand, I mean, it sounds like I'm slighting the guy when I say that. I mean, if you're a big league starting pitcher, that's a pretty valuable commodity. You know, is he going to be Zimmer or Ventura or Almonte? No, I don't think he's going to be that. But like, if this guy can pitch in the back of the rotation and give you 30 starts a year, that's useful. I mean, the thing, he has a lot of, it's an interesting combination because he's a big guy, and usually the longer lever guys, you know, fight their control and command some. And he has a lot of effort in his delivery, which usually doesn't lend itself to control and command either, but he throws a lot of strikes. And he doesn't, you know, his fastball, you know, velocity-wise is pretty average. It's 88 to 93 usually. But he commands it really well. He throws it on a steep downhill plane in a good angle because he's 6'7", and it's really heavy. So it's if you're just putting the gun on the fastball, you're like, okay, it's an average fastball. It's nothing special, but it plays better than that. His fastball is a weapon. The rest of his stuff's okay. You know, changeup is okay. Breaking ball is probably his third pitch. It's not going to pitch. You know, you're not going to pitch in front of Zimmer Ventura with that stuff. But if he continues to throw strikes and continue to, you know, have the command and life and angle and plan on that fastball, then I think he could be a guy who pitches in the fourth or fifth spot in a rotation.
We'll definitely take that. And like you said, there's always value in those guys. All right, you guys did the top 100, so what's next for MLBPipeline.com? Is it going full press into the draft coverage, or is it starting to work on next year's top 100?
Well, not quite yet. It's interesting. This is my first full year. I just started working for MLB Pipeline, MLB.com in September, and we do things in the exact reverse order we did them at Baseball America. Baseball America, I edited the prospect handbook. And we would do the team list, then we do the top 100, and then we do our early draft preview. Well, at MLB, we did our early draft preview in November, and we've done the top 100. We're actually updating all of our team lists. The top 100 has been updated, but the team lists we last updated that are up on the site are from mid-season of last year. So we're in the process of updating all of them, and we'll roll out one team at a time every day in March. I guess it'll be 7 a week. Maybe we'll do 3 on Mondays so we don't have, you know, just to have them on the weekends when people aren't necessarily online as much. But we'll be rolling those out throughout the spring training schedule in March. That's the next project, and then it'll take us to opening day, and then we'll be diving full bore into the draft.
All right, everybody can go follow Jim Callis on Twitter at Jim Callis with two L's. Jim Callis MLB. You can also read everything from him and Jonathan Mayo and Bernie Pleiskoff, great writers, at MLBPipeline.com and MLB.com. Jim, thanks for talking with us about some of these prospects and lending your insight.
Oh, no problem, Michael. Glad to help. Always fun talking baseball.
We're excited to have an exclusive interview with the new iPhone 4 assistant, Siri. Hello, Siri. How are you doing today?
Thank you. It's nice for me to be here.
Siri, you've been pretty busy with the new iPhone launch. What do you do for fun?
It's just been crazy around here. I've been looking for a place to get away and wind down, but I have not been able to find anything my style on the plaza.
Well, have you tried Kelly's Westport Inn?
I show Kelly's Westport Inn to be at the corner of Westport Road and Pennsylvania Avenue.
It's got way more than that. It's been voted by The Pitch as one of the best places to meet guys in Kansas City. It's got a great laid-back vibe, plenty of TVs to watch sports, an awesome pizza place in the back, and plenty of drink specials during the week.
You say it's a nice place to meet guys? Accessing. This sounds like the place for me. Shutting down now.
You can't shut down. If you want to meet Siri and other great Kansas Cityans, check out Kelly's Westport Inn, 500 Westport Road in beautiful, laid-back Westport.
So that was another great interview there with Michael Engel and Jim Callis. And then the last of the prospect trio that we were hoping to have, and we were actually going to do Callis in a separate show, but because we couldn't land, I'm having a brain fart. Mike, help me out.
Well, we were trying to get hold of J.J. Cooper. We didn't reach him, but Lesky and Clint have him, so they're going to talk to him on Pine Tar Press.
Clint promised him special lovings, and so they will sure. Have him over at Pine Tar Press.
Yeah.
So this next week is going to be a big prospect week at RoyalsPodcast.com. So we may even have to push it that way. And then, of course, I have no idea what's going on Walk-Off Talk and the Triple Play podcast. But
Walk-Off Talk has they're talking to the fake Ned. So
say that again because it cut out.
Well, on Walk-Off Talk, they're talking with the fake Ned.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, so that's so there's that. Triple Play, they talked a bit about Chen, some prospects, the AL Central. I think they focused on the Indians. So that show should be up by the time this one is up.
A lot of good stuff going on the network, and we love this network. And it was kind of my brainchild. It was kind of my brainchild to come together. It was kind of ironic because when we first thought of RoyalsPodcast.com, it was like I went to Clint and I said, what would happen if we just put the shows together? There was already talk of Mike leaving Fansided, so I knew that there wasn't going to be a lot of lot of problem there for very long, at least, and everything else. And Clint goes, you know, that's funny. I was going to talk to you about the same thing. So we came together, and then I kind of had this vision of, like we said, we can't do a show every day, but what if we could, you know, do a show every day? And that's kind of what we're getting right now with Triple Fuck Off Talking. You're kind of getting different views. I try to listen to every show. I'm a little bit behind, but I do try to listen to every show and make sure that we're not telling you the same thing over and over. But there was a lot of Hall of Fame talk during the week of the Hall of Fame, but frankly, there was no baseball going on. As Lesky has said, I don't know how many times on their show, this has been the least exciting offseason for the Royals in probably 10 years, and there's just not been really much going on, so we've done our best to kind of utilize that for you. Of course, you can email KansasCityBaseballVault@gmail.com and let us know what you would you'd like to hear. But I have a couple of things that I want to share with you guys. It was pretty cool. Clinton went out and did me a favor, and he got me some endorsements. So here's one from Joel Goldberg.
This is Joel Goldberg from Fox Sports Kansas City, and I got to say, I mean, how could you not vote for Royal Man? He's real. He's not fake. He is real. Royal Man, all the way.
We didn't just get guys from the Royals. We also had one from the Omaha Storm Chasers, the voice of the Omaha Storm Chasers. Mark Nasser had this to say.
This is Mark Nasser from the Omaha Storm Chasers Baseball Club. It would be blasphemy if you do not vote for Royal Man for the MLB Fan Cave.
And, of course, what kind of show would this be if we didn't reach out to the players? And Clint asked asked Alex Gordon his opinion on it, and he said this.
Hey guys, I'm Alex Gordon, and will you please vote for Royal Man at MLB Fan Cave?
So, a little endorsement from all over there, from Alex and Mark and of course, Joel Goldberg. Joel's was long. It was by far the longest of the three, and Alex was one of those, like, is this guy really asking me to say this type of thing? So, it was pretty neat. I believe Mike McCartney has done one as well, probably. And that's in the Fake Nets possession. So, we're going to work with him, and we're going to try to put all these together in something a little fun so that we can, especially if I hit the 50, I want to have these ready to go. But, yeah, you know, this whole Fan Cave thing has really been fun. It's been a great way to get kind of back into Twitter. I've kind of gotten away from it and been going through a lot in my life, and I've been pretty down. And so it's been kind of fun to get all that going again. Outside of that, guys, was there anything else that we needed to talk about this week?
Well, I mean, I was kind of looking at it, and it just seems like there's a big roster crunch coming. We talked a little bit about this when we were talking about Bruce Chen. It's really tough for me to see a scenario where Yordano Ventura and Danny Duffy are both on the opening day roster. It's really tough because you've got, you know, your nine guys in the lineup. You know, those guys you're definitely sure of. You know, you've got Valencia, Maxwell, Dyson, and probably Brett Hayes or Ramon Hernandez as your backup catcher. So, you know, typical 13-12 split. So, I mean, you tell me where these guys fit in. I mean, you have to have James Shields, Jason Vargas, Jeremy Guthrie, Bruce Chen, and then, you know, the fifth spot and the rotation's up for grabs. But that's four pitchers, so you've got, you know, eight more pitchers available, you know, for full 12. Greg Holland, obviously, is one. Kelvin Herrera, Aaron Crow, Tim Collins. You've got Luke Hochaver, who's under his arbitration agreement. You've got Wade Davis, who's under contract, so that's six. And then, you know, what else do you do? You've got Danny Duffy's got to fit in there somehow, and Lewis Coleman somehow. So these are all guys, if you're looking at it that way, Duffy and Ventura have options left. I think Coleman has one, but I think we're out of the woods on the Lewis Coleman being demoted thing. Well, I mean, I don't know how you fit them together unless there's a trade. So it's really tough for me to see how that works out. On one hand, like we said earlier, you're not forcing Ventura and Duffy to both be good right away. But at the same time, what if they're both good right away and you want both of them in the rotation? Now you're kind of stuck, and the Chen signing really kind of puts a hamper on that. So it's going to be difficult to really fit both of those on there unless the Royals get really creative and are able to find an opening to fit those guys in. So that's kind of my thing. And as I thought more about this, you know, are they going to do that to try to protect Yordano Ventura from any kind of service time or Super 2 things? You know, I know Clint Scholes has talked a lot about that on Twitter. And really, if Ventura can start right out of the gate, he probably needs to be starting right out of the gate. So I don't know. You know, Ventura's a guy he signed originally for $28,000. I think he'd be a guy who'd be really, really easy to lock up if he shows promise right away, to where the Royals could even make the Super 2 stuff irrelevant. I mean, they could sign him to a Sal Perez type of deal and have minimal, you know, raises year by year until he starts hitting some option years. I think that's a way to go, but you have to start that by having him in the majors right away. Jason Park said he could be AL Rookie of the Year. Is he going to be able to do that if he comes up in middle May, late May? I don't know, and I think the Royals are missing an opportunity if Ventura can actually do that.
I just want it to be a good season, and this pitching staff really concerns me because I feel like we're 2 years ago where we had big hopes for the hitting, and then we didn't really have enough at pitching, and Bruce Chen had a down year that year, and it just kind of went from there. So,
well, I mean, if you'd have told me in 2010, hey, going into 2014, you're going to be coming off an 86-win season, I'd be like, great. And then you continue, and you say, but Bruce Chen and Lou Kochaver might still be in the starting rotation. I have no idea how to process that information. Really wouldn't. And I think it's I don't know. I mean, part of that is that Duffy hasn't cemented himself, and part of that is that none of the other guys have jumped up. But some of that is, you know, going out and signing Jason Vargas right away, and some of that is signing Bruce Chen right now when you've got other guys who could maybe fill that same spot. So I don't know what's going to happen. I share some of those same concerns. I mean, if you're looking for three guys in your starting rotation and hoping they can be average, that's not a great place to start, in my opinion.
Before I forget, I did happen to look at the podcast page. I did want to mention, if you haven't already heard it, there's some great Fan Fest audio out there too.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if it looks like it's from Pine Tar Press, and I think
Clint had some good stuff from one of the caravans, and Fake Ned contributed some really good stuff from Denny Matthews and Eric Hosmer, James Shields, Billy Butler, and David Glass, of all people. Somehow he cornered David Glass and got him to talk.
Can you imagine what
Net actually talked to David Glass?
Yeah. I think
not explode. That's impressive.
I think his interview with David Glass lasted longer than the one Danny Parkins had with him at the All-Star break a couple years ago.
Well, and Danny still, I think, regrets that interview. I think, well, that's not too bad. He's got the afternoon show now like he should have had all along. So, boy, that's a disaster we could talk about another day, is how the old station manager really screwed up at 610 when he decided how to redo Nick's spot when Nick was leaving and created a whole mess. So, what we got? Anything?
Mike Moustakas is apparently in the best shape of his life and has a mohawk. Oh,
ding, ding, ding.
Yeah, we called that one last week, I think, too.
You know, once in a while we get something right.
Oh, Aaron Crow settled for arbitration. He's going to make let me look it up here. He's going to make $1.475 million. It's not a bad payday. It leaves Greg Holland, who, you know, they're at the point where they can still come to an agreement before any arbitration hearing. But, my hunch is he's going to actually take it to the distance. Like, Craig Kimbrell is a guy out there who I kind of expect Kimbrell to go all the way to a hearing, and I expect him to win his case. And if he wins it, I think Greg Holland sits really well to win as well. You know, they're not far off. The Royals submitted a $4.1 million arbitration salary. Holland's camp submitted 5.2. I mean, you can split the difference and call it 4.65 pretty easily. But if he can make an extra $550,000 and he feels a good chance to do it, I don't see why he wouldn't do it. So either way, the Royals are going to have him. It's just a matter of how much they're going to be paying him.
And I would almost, God, I just, he's never went to arbitration. Dayton Moore's never went to arbitration. So I'm still not ruling out that they figure out a way to get this done. Kimbrel will go to arbitration because that's the Braves' way. But
usually. Though this year they signed Jason Hayward to a two-year deal now to avoid it, and they signed Freeman to the extension we talked about earlier. But I think Kimbrel, they're far enough apart that one's, they're not going to find a middle ground there. I think they're like $3.5 million apart. And I think Kimbrel's going to get his $9 million. I think he's going to win his case. So there's no reason, again, for him to not try to win it.
Something we can talk on about on a different show is Holland's going to get paid this year, and if he has anything near what he had last year as this year, he's going to get paid next year, and then he's going to get traded. And
I was just going to say that's exactly it. If Kimbrel's out there getting $9 million and Holland is pretty close statistically to a player like Kimbrel, then I mean, Royals should trade him at the deadline, especially because they've got more players than the Braves do that can fill the role. Obviously, not as well, but the closer role can be filled by somebody who can do a pretty good job next year for the Royals. So
I know people are freaking out about the thought of trading him, but you know, Soria wasn't a closer until he became a closer.
Exactly.
And you know, you can go back through time, and there's been many like that. And I honestly think, I know people don't think he has a head for it, but I think Hoch could close. I know everybody just thinks that's crazy, but you look at Todd Van Poppel, and he's the same kind of pitcher. Todd Van Poppel went from being a mediocre starter to a really good reliever and closer, and I think you could see the same thing out of Hochaver, and if not, there's enough other arms. If Herrera just needs to get right, which he will, the hate for Herrera had gone way too far last season, which we talked about. He could be a closer in 2 years,
like
no sweat.
For that pitching staff.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I think what you usually see is the guys who end up being closers are the guys who can get outs in the sixth, seventh, eighth innings, and then they end up being put in that role. You know, I don't think I don't think they care what inning it is. I mean, you're going to run into guys who do worse in that spot, but, you know, I think those are the exception and not the rule. I think if you've got a good pitcher with good stuff and they can get outs, I think that's all you really need in a closer. And Hochaver, I think, could do it. There are a lot of people last year around the trade deadline that Hochaver's name was coming up for a few teams as potentially a guy who could be a setup man or possibly a closer. And, you know, I think he's definitely got pretty good stuff, good fastball, good cutter. It's just a matter of, you know, the second time, third time he's seen a lineup when he's been in the rotation. If he only has to face 3, 4, 5 batters, yeah, I think he can do fine.
Hochaver is not on this team at the end of 2014 unless he's closing in 2015. That's what I'm predicting now. Unless the Royals figure out a way to trade Holland.
I don't even think there's that because, I mean, he's already making $5.21 million now.
If they end up having to make him a closer and he still has success, he's just going to keep making more money.
Well, I don't know that he would – well, I guess he'd have to close this year if they traded Holland. If they trade Holland, then Hochaver may stay another year, but otherwise – he'll be a free agent after this year, so it's in their best interest to move on. So I would expect Hochaver to be traded. I expect Davis to be traded, and then there's a lot of pitching on this team, and a lot of people are going to freak out about trades that maybe for prospects, maybe for pieces. For now, obviously, you hope that they'll trade these guys for a starter, but relievers are kind of a dime a dozen, even good ones. I mean, look at the Royals; they've really shown that you can make relievers out of failed starters, which has always been if you go back. When we talked to Dayton Moore back at one of the Blog to the K things, when I talked to him, that's what he said. He said, a reliever is a failed starter, so sometimes it's harder to get value for them unless you're trading to Dayton Moore and then you give up plenty for them.
Well, the thing is with, like, I mean, I talked about the roster crunch. I mean, you got guys like Johnny Joseph who can be an effective reliever who's going to be, you know, stuck in AAA again. Chris Dwyer could possibly be like a lefty specialist that they could, you know, use in just about any other bullpen. I mean, Lewis Coleman only got 39 innings last year. He would probably be a setup guy on a lot of teams. And the Royals had trouble finding a spot for him. Plus, the Royals just signed Guillermo Mota, who's been pretty decent, and John Roush, and they're both on minor league deals with some experience. And I think they still have something in the tank. If they needed to use them, I think they could easily use them. And, you know, the Royals have a lot of arms that could jump up and be relievers. It's, you know, it's not going to be tough to find the last guy in the bullpen for them.
Well, anything else you got, Jeff?
No, I think that about covers it.
Yeah, I don't know. This team's really kind of gotten me worried. I came off such a good year, and I had them picked at 90, 92 wins, and I don't want to come back on that, but I really thought they were going to get another legitimate starter, and maybe they do. Maybe they're keeping the money so low because they're still playing the game with some of the big names that are out there. Maybe Santana comes home to Kansas City, but I think it's done with Bruce Chen and Roush in the minor leagues. Or Bruce Chen with Brad Penny and Roush in the minor leagues, and Chen re-signed to the major league team. And just, I think they have the pieces that they want to try to revive and give them a little Casey magic like we've seen in the past. And you know, this team's already loaded up. They overpaid for Vargas, which we know he magically misplayed the market again and paid too much for Jason Vargas. And you know, James Shield, great. Hopefully Jeremy Guthrie's good. But then you know, Wade Davis, Brad Penny, Yordano Ventura, Danny P, Kyle Zimmer, Bruce Chen. You know what all this means? Who knows? We'll find out in just under a couple of months. But and then they're going to look awful in spring, because they always do. Everybody looks awful in spring, it seems like. And then they come out and have a halfway decent year, and Twitter's going to blow up again this year. But I think on that, next week you get a reprieve from me. Actually, you've kind of gotten a reprieve from me the last couple weeks. I've been trying to step back more into the hosting role and less into, you know, letting the guys do what they do best, and that's tell you the facts and the numbers, and letting me step back into the role that I'm best at, which is just keeping things going and what have you. And so next week there will be no me at all. I'm finally getting my honeymoon, and we are going to Las Vegas, and it's going to be a lot of fun. So I will be out of the show next week. So it'll be Mike and Jeff, and who knows? It's kind of Mike's show. So he goes out and gets a third or gets a guest, and it'll be a surprise next week. But you can follow us at KC Baseball Vault for all that information at KC Baseball Vault. KC Baseball Vault, of course. Subscribe on YouTube, on iTunes, and if you have any question as to where to find that, go to Royals Podcast singular, even though there's four of them. Go to RoyalsPodcast.com and click on the iTunes link. Click on the Stitcher link. You can listen to us there. We're also on BaseballPodcast.net, which you can hear on TuneIn Radio, and you can go to that website and get that. So lots of places to listen to us, and we sure hope you do. Email us at KansasCityBaseballVault@gmail.com. But until next week, well, actually 2 weeks for me, but until next week for the other guys, for Mike and Jeff, I'm Troy. Go to www.voteroyalman.com. Watch the video, give it a thumbs up, and until next week, go Royals.
You have been listening to a Royals Podcast Network presentation.
What the hell are you eating?
Hershey's Kisses. That's Mike. Yeah, my waiting to see if I have to go to work food.
When will you find out?
I don't know. Last night it was about, I don't know what time it was. It was about 8 o'clock last time.
I'm sorry, I'm laughing over here. Not because of what you're saying, but because my wife is cleaning the kitchen. She found a ribbon from our wedding and tied it into a bow. And we have this kitten that's probably, what, a year old, Megan? If that, and she put this bow on this cat. She's already unpleasant as it is, and she really did not like the bow. And when she wants to hide things like toys or whatever else, she hides them in my shoes. So I look over, and this cat's gotten this ribbon off of herself, and she's trying to hide it in my shoe so that my wife will quit putting it on her.
Smart cat.
But she's failing miserably. But it's pretty funny to watch. Anyways, back to the top 100.
There's also the big Carlos Peguero trade, too, to discuss.
Oh, how could we forget?
It's huge.
I've been well, man. How have you been?
I've been well. I got married and...
Oh, shit. Yeah. Marriage. Congratulations.
Yeah. I got married, and we moved to Albuquerque, New Mexico, and just kind of hanging out right now.
So. That's excellent. I remember I've been to Albuquerque several times.
Well, it's usually not an intentional destination, so.
No.
I'm trying to remember, it was one of the local TV guys from Kansas City was talking about how driving from Kansas City to spring training, how you go through Tucumcari and Albuquerque or whatever, and I was laughing at some of the stories because, you know, I've dealt with those drives so much, but that's not what we had you on for. So,
geography with Jason Parks,
right? Which would still be exciting, but that's a whole other story. So,
I won a geography B when I was in the fifth grade.
Well, there you go.
I'm keeping that in the show.
I'm able to talk about it.
That might be that right before the open on this show. All right, anybody need anything? Or are we good to go so we can just wrap this up and get out of here in the next 10 minutes?
I could use some cheesecake if you can make that happen.
I cannot get you cheesecake.
I'll also like a piece of cheesecake.
God damn it, Troy!
I'm unable to. Although that was that interview, it just was like everything was happening all at once. We realized one of our cats was locked in a room, let him out, and then he immediately got sick on my wife's white couch and happened to throw up on my white work shirt that I'm hoping I can get clean. So I was trying to deal with that while listening to this Jason interview, and then it came back to me while I was still trying to get that cleaned up. I literally had cat puke on one hand while I was trying to finish that interview. So how's that for an image?
Thanks.
Yeah. So that's why that was rough in parts, but you guys really picked me up, so I do appreciate that. So we're going to come back in 5, 4, 3...